When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/audioboom.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
The vibes are high. And why is that on the early line? Well, I say, man, come on. It's a Tuesday. We're a little bit slow getting out of the gate. Not us, people. Not us at the Sports Grid Network. Why is that? Because we're blessed right now. We have the NBA Finals. It's going to get to a game number six. We have game number six in the Stanley Cup Final, which we will talk about just a little bit later in the show to set the stage for, is this the last game of the hockey season? And will Lord Stanley Cup, who will be in the building tonight, actually come out of the case there, get shined up, and it was presented here to the Florida Panthers. But before we get there, there's always hot topics that still pop up, Joe Neary. And we talked about the Dodgers, right? How dominant they should be to enter the season, playing good baseball now. Otani's back on the mound. But we do have other news that came out. If you remember, there was a handicapping / gambling / thievery scandal with Ipe Mizuhara, who was the Japanese interpreter for Shohei Otani. Well, it turns out now, he reports to federal prison in Pennsylvania for a 57-month stint here, which I always feel, Joe, we didn't get this story delivered to us the way I thought it was going to go. And this scandal just turns out that it was one guy able to pick up the phone and just get millions of dollars from his best friend / employer / interpreter / baseball player. I always felt like we didn't get everything we needed to know here, Joe. Are you the same way with this?
Well, listen, I mean, if you're going to pay me the kind of money he's probably paying this guy in order to be the fall guy, I would report to jail as well, Donnie, in a heartbeat. I would, in no problem. Just go ahead and bring me. I'll spend 54 months for the amount of money he's probably getting to be that guy. No, I do not think we got the full story. I don't think we'll ever get the full story. And listen, Major League Baseball, too big to fail. You're not going to have your biggest superstar be the center of a betting controversy in any way, shape, or form. That's all you need to know with this.
Yeah, I think they did dodge a big bullet there, and maybe he's just not going to talk. Remember when Barry Bonds went to jail, or they were trying to put Barry Bonds in jail, but his trainer was like, Barry's going to take care of me on the back end. He didn't say anything to anybody, and they kept throwing him to jail. Like, you don't talk, you're going to jail. And my guy just stayed silent at this point. I don't know if we're really in that realm with Ipe, but it sounds like, hey, when you come out, you'll probably be taken care of. But also understand this. Isn't it amazing? Like, he probably has a fleet of lawyers and bank associates here where one guy could pick up the phone one day and Jim like, hey, by the way, you know Shohei doesn't like to get on the phone. He needs $4.2 million today to be wired over to Bank of America. And like, okay, done deal. Like, how did it even get to that level at that point?
No idea. Yeah. And what are you betting in order to be able to? There's so many things. What happened to the bookie they were making bets with? Who did he roll over on? Like, there's a lot we did not eventually learn or wasn't made a big deal of with this. And you wonder why.
Like maybe, Like calling up, like you could say, like, okay, well, Shohei's not going to get on the phone, but he loved this new Bentley he saw because it can wire over $500,000 to the dealership here. Like, oh, wait, that makes some sense. He wants to spend some money there. Or, boy, he had a huge outing this weekend. All the boys were over. We spent, I don't know, $75,000 at Nobu. And can you please pay that off for us there? But as opposed to, hey, this is the third time this week you called for over $1 million here. What's actually going on? Don't worry. You know he doesn't want to get on the phone. He's embarrassed to talk that way. Can you please just send the money over? So some things we might never find out, but 57 months reporting to a federal prison in Pennsylvania. We'll see how that goes here. Let's get back to Major League Baseball here at the top of the hour. Why not? Because the Red Sox, interesting things over the years, because I get angry at Boston, and I'm not a Boston fan. I could care less if they win one game or win a World Series at this point, right? But I look from the fan base and say, we pay so much money, which means we show up to that ballpark in Fenway. We support the Red Sox probably better than just about every single team in Major League Baseball. We deserve to have our money go to the right spots, which means you should be able to sign Mookie Betts. You should be able to sign Xander Bogaerts. You should be able to be happy with Rafael Devers making $300 million because you make a ton of money there being the Red Sox ownership group. And now we see this quote from a Jeff Passan tweet yesterday. Red Sox chief baseball officer Craig Breslow on succeeding without Rafael Devers in 2025. Quote, I do think there's a real chance that at the end of the season, we're looking back and we won more games than we otherwise would have. I mean, the daggers are out, Joe, between Devers and what apparently he was sabotaging this organization. They gave him the money. He didn't steal it.
No, he didn't, but they realized they made a mistake. And now from a PR standpoint, and as soon as this was announced, we started to see the PR teams for both sides kind of jump in. Apparently it was Devers that was requesting the trades in spring training. He wanted out and the Red Sox are going, we had to get rid of him. He's a cancer. He's not. And it just keeps going and going and going. And what is the guy supposed to say that we just traded our franchise player and we're going to lose more games now because of it? Like, what was he supposed to say, Donnie? Exactly.
You know what I love about this too, Joe, because you are getting both sides of it now. Where the Red Sox are like, addition by subtraction, they're taking the salary. We don't even care who we got back. We just couldn't have him in our locker room anymore. He was detrimental for the team and basically saying we couldn't find common ground between the two, like where Devers wanted to play, how he was comfortable, and how we wanted to proceed as an organization with all these young players coming up now. So Devers then gets traded to San Francisco. What's the first quote that comes out of San Francisco? Hey, we asked Raf, and he said, you know what? I'll play wherever you want me to play just so we can win baseball games. You got to love this, don't you? You got to love
it. Yeah, but also let's be realistic here. Let's stop comparing this to Nico Harrison and to the trade there for Luca and the Lake. This is not that. Yeah. Not even remotely close. Rafael Devers is going to hit 30 home runs. Yeah, congratulations. He's a liability defensively. This is not a guy like an Ohtani that's over a 10 war here in his career. Stop it. This is not even remotely close to Luka. Luka is a franchise player. Devers is a nice player that'll have a couple of really nice years, but this is, you're not destroying the franchise by getting rid of Rafael Devers.
If we take a look at the two teams' outcomes now, because the Boston Red Sox are figuring that they get some addition by subtraction. You look at their win total in the season, 82 and a half games to make the playoffs. They're a plus 172, which again, plus money is fun to bet on, but plus money to make the playoffs means you're not supposed to make the playoffs. The pennant at 18-1 for the Giants, Joe. We have a win total of 89.5 in the playoffs for them, a minus 172, and pennant odds of a 14-1 price. After the trade went down, are you higher or lower on either one of these two franchises?
Well, I find it amazing that we're not spending more time talking about the fact that the Giants and former Giant Buster Posey, by the way, who is now pulling the strings in the front office of the Giants. The Giants have been trying to sign a big franchise player now for years. They couldn't get Judge. They tried to go out and get everybody. They swung and missed on Ohtani. Like, they have been trying to get somebody there. And Buster comes in and is like, yeah, no, we're going to spend some money here now. And they have, Donnie. You think the Red Sox, they've got plenty of money in that ownership group. And they're willing to spend it now. So I think the move by the Giants is fantastic. I think it's a new era for the San Francisco Giants, one that I can't wait to see what else they do at the trade deadline.
Yeah, the Giants for like 2 years, Joe, were like, we have money. Somebody take it. Please just take the money. Yes. We're offering top salary to all these guys, but nobody is taking it here. So now you have to make a trade because a big contract. Yeah, Devers will take it at this point because he's already signed. Now, the series coming up here, Joe, Boston taking on San Francisco. Is that in San Francisco or is that in Boston?
Yes, that's in San Francisco.
Boy, that would have been awesome. If that was in Boston, that would have been fantastic here. So what we're going to do is, I'm not going to burn this topic, but Devers, will we take him here to have a big series against his former team and what some of those price points would be to go yard in that scenario? We do it all in the early line. It's a Sports Grid Network. Come on back after the break with us.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24-7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Big weekend series coming up between these two ball clubs, the San Francisco Giants and the Boston Red Sox. Not really because it's make or break, and if one team wins the series, the other can't make the playoffs or make a pennant run. But the fact that sometimes these things just work themselves out, like, oh, man, Devers is gone. The fan base is upset, changing the locker room. Well, oh, yeah, in a couple days, these two teams, the Giants and the Red Sox, will do battle in San Francisco. Rafael Devers, in his new home in the Bay Area, will welcome in the Boston Red Sox. If we take a look at the FanDuel Sportsbook, they got you covered this weekend. And how about, could it be a big weekend for Rafael Devers? Not in a certain game, but how about this? The odds for Devers to hit a home run in this series, one home run, plus 144 price, two home runs, plus 630 price, three home runs, 17-1. That's actually not bad, though. Like, you get three games, I'm going to assume, for one home run at a plus money price where, let's just say, Devers on a day-to-day basis would be, what, 350, 450, 550 in that range? Three home runs in the series, 17-1. How are we feeling about that, Joe? Are we buying in on Devers, or are the Boston Red Sox like, we're not going to give this guy any pitches to hit just to make sure that he doesn't do any damage off us?
Well, what Rafael Devers is going to figure out, what I don't think people are taking into consideration, is Oracle Park is not Fenway Park. He is not hitting the same amount of home runs that he hit at Fenway Park that he's going to hit here at Oracle. That is a pitcher's ballpark. And yes, he's a great hitter, but in no way, shape, or form is he going to hit as many home runs at this park as he would have if he still played at home there at Fenway. So I'm all about saying no, it ain't happening. No way am I touching home run props for Devers.
He's got 15 bombs on the season. We'll see if he can return the favor there on the Boston Red Sox. But let me ask you this question, too, about baseball. Like, you're building a new ballpark, right? And like, the evolution of the older ballparks becoming new again, like Oriole Park at Camden Yards back in the late 1980s. Like, that thing is still beautiful to this day. But it was built as a hitter's ballpark in a nice condition. I never understood the fact that let's build a big ballpark. Like, remember Citi Field came up for the Mets? Like, yeah, we're going to have a pitcher's ballpark. After 1 year, like, this is ridiculous. Like, nobody can hit home runs. Like, Detroit, you look at the configuration of that field, the fence is like 30 feet farther in left field. Like, this is ridiculous. Nobody likes this. San Francisco's got a beautiful ballpark, but I always hate the, yeah, this is a really good pitcher's ballpark. Why do we do that in Major League Baseball, Joe? Come on now.
It's a good, especially with the wind and everything else that you're dealing with there. So yeah, it's one of the lower scoring ballparks in Major League Baseball. The dimensions are not favorable. So yeah, it's going to take a little bit of transitioning. What might have been a home run at Fenway or off the Green Monster ain't going to be that way at Oracle for Devers.
But I tell you, juiced or no juice, like Barry Bonds' home ballpark with San Francisco, he hit 73 bombs in one season. Like, make it make sense. It doesn't. Like, he's like, oh, we did it at Yankee Stadium. No, he did it in San Francisco, which is even more incredible. But Barry Bonds, he's not coming back to Major League Baseball. He's one of the best baseball players in the history of the sport. How about this transition over to hot dog eating Joey Chestnut? He announced he is back and he is ready to defend his title. And he sent out a series of tweets yesterday. Joe, how about this? I'm thrilled to be returning to the Nathan's Famous 4th of July hot dog eating contest. This event means the world to me. It's a cherished tradition and a celebration of American culture and a huge part of my life. Well, I have and continue to partner with a variety of companies, including some in the plant-based space. Those relationships were never a conflict with my love for hot dogs. To be clear, Nathan's is the only hot dog company I've ever worked with. I respect there are differences in interpretation, but I'm grateful we've been able to find common ground. I'm excited to be back on Coney Island stage doing what I live to do and celebrate the 4th of July with hot dogs in my hands. Stay hungry. Now, a little bit sort of interesting statement on the third one here at this point, but he's back. He's ready to eat. Chestnut, the ratings will be back now because the rightful king of the glizzy is back on Coney Island.
I'm just excited. It's always been like a fourth of July tradition there to be able to see him there.
But look at that.
Yeah. No, I really can't because I actually witnessed and emceed an event, an eating contest that he was at. And it might have been the most disgusting thing I have ever seen and witnessed. I promised myself never again. But hey, it's a tradition with the, you know, with having the hot dogs for Nathan's. I'm all for it. Nobody's going to beat him. And I think we can still bet on that, Donnie, can't we?
Yes. We're in on this. Right. Like, we're going to get down on this. But by the way, let me ask you a question. Like, you see the pictures coming up. I enjoy a nice hot dog, right? I like a nice, you know, nice beverage in my hand. But I don't mix the beverage and the bun. Like, I don't know if I could even I'm sort of like starting to get some you know, about to throw up in my mouth a little bit, if you will.
Yeah.
Like, can you imagine Joe dipping your hot dog bun in water and then eating it? I'm great. Like, people are eating breakfast right now, but you think of that right now, you ain't finishing your breakfast. Like, how can you do that? The gag reflex has to be amazing. Terrible.
No. No, all I'm thinking about is that how long am I going to be tasting hot dogs with doing this competition? Like, I might not get the taste of hot dog out of my mouth for about 3 months. It's just absolutely awful. I'm with you. I like to enjoy it solid. Give me my condiment. We're all good to go. I have no intention of woofing that. No way. Absolutely not.
By the way, like, I got questions on this too, because the feed is amazing, and that's why we watch. Like, gluttonous performances sometimes certainly get cheered on. Do you not leave the house though for like 3, 4, 5 days after this competition? Like, how do you go on with like normal life? Like, I don't understand. Like, you even hear Joey Chestnut sometimes saying, I interviewed him, like, yeah, like, some, like, we're hungry actually after the competition. What? You eat 70 hot dogs? You go out for dinner, have a nice chicken parm?
Please, Donnie. And you know what? The guys that are and the girls that are always the best at this are the skinniest, smallest people I've ever seen in my life, Donnie.
Yes.
They are not the people you think that would wolf down, you know, 57 hot dogs in 3 minutes. Unbelievable. I don't get it. They're genetically different. That's all I'll say.
How many could you knock down, Joe? Like, you take it to a barbecue, you're hungry. Like, you know what? Let me see how many hot dogs I can get down. Like, how many are we actually doing?
Two, maybe three, and then it's immediately go and get me to Tums because I'm going to be tasting that for days afterwards. Absolutely not.
I mean, former producers around here saying the 50 spots going up on the board. I mean, we're betting that.
Stop.
We're handicapping that. Somebody eating 50 hot dogs at the same time. Stop the madness over here. We'll talk to JY. How many hot dogs for JY? Come on.
Oh.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Oh, right back out of here on the early line. Hour number two in full effect. You never know the fun that we have. Like, we'll get in arguments over how many hot dogs we're eating. How can you get it done here? You never know who's going to stop by either. Sonny writes that it's Joe Ranieri. You know, stop by. It's the coach. It's James Young. Game 5 of the NBA was last night. Excitement all the way around. And we are getting a game 6, coach.
Yes, we are getting a game 6, and good morning to the both of you. Mm-hmm. Hopefully, Donnie, you don't have to carry the Kevin Walsh again today, but that's a story for another day. It was a game that I think a lot of us thought we were going to get, right? We were going to get Oklahoma City probably with the win. It was a matter of how you did it. And if you played this right, and I pray people did, I thought the game was better to be played live, let one team jump out, play the run, and play the run on the way back. And if you played it the right way, meaning probably wait to the end of the first quarter, the second quarter, then took Indiana plus the points, and then when that lead got down to two, jumped on the money line for Oklahoma City. You got yourself a nice little middle there last night.
Yeah, Coach, the Pacers, I mean, look, they're always game. You know they're never out of it here. Down double digits at the break. They storm back in the third quarter. Midway through the fourth quarter, it's a two-point game after that Siakam three-point shot. But let's get to the bottom of this, because sometimes before we say, all right, how did the game get to 120 to 109? I just look at the great performances last night. Jalen Williams, Coach, 35 minutes, 14 of 25 from the floor, got to the free throw line, knocked down his threes, 40 total points in that game. Talk to me about Jalen Williams and his ability to step up in a monster game, a pivotal 2-2 series tie at home. He said, you know what, Shea, I got you. I'm here for you.
Hey, listen, if Indiana said we gave up 31 to SGA, yeah, you could say, okay, we got a shot. But you give up 40 to Jalen Williams, 71 combined, the two of them, that's something, Donnie, that you can't overcome. Like, you literally can't, mm-hmm, because there's other guys that could score and do things. We'll talk about them in a second. I thought that what I liked out of Jalen Williams out of Oklahoma City is, for the first time in the series, they took advantage of the turnovers. And they got out and they got out and ran. I think the first two or three or four shots for Jalen Williams were dunks in transition, backdoor cuts, whatever you wanted. So he became that three-level scorer. And this is the problem, even with, like, him going to the basket and even that tough, I guess you would call it like a Kobe Jordan fade away from the left elbow over Naismith. This is where Indiana's got their issue versus like Brunson. It's the size. It's the size of the SGA. It's the size of the Jalen Williams. He's too big. He's too strong. And that's why I thought it was very important for Mark Daigneault to go with that double big lineup. So now Siakam can't guard Jalen Williams. He's got to guard Chet. So that creates a matchup nightmare for someone, guys, that is strong enough to finish over you in the lane, but can knock down threes and get to his mid-range.
The difference in this game to me, Coach, and if I'm Indiana and Rick Carlisle, I was down 18. I got it to a two-point game with 8.5 minutes to go. And the thing that killed them, much like game one, the only difference is the turnovers in game one didn't lead to 2 points. The turnovers in game five led to 32 points. You didn't have Halliburton, and yet you still had a chance with 8.5 minutes to win the game. That has got to be encouraging if you're Indiana here.
You got to take care of the ball. You got to take care of the ball. And there's only so long that you're going to be able to take advantage of our team not take advantage of your mistakes. They fed Oklahoma City when it got down to it. And this is why they're so dangerous, Joe. They can create runs off their defense. And we could talk about after the break about what Rick Carlisle did with Halliburton. Should he have played him? Should he not have played him? Should he have stopped with McConnell? Was on the third quarter? If you people are looking at someone, look at Nembhard. Nembhard was awful, and he was throwing the ball over the gym in the fourth quarter. If you are Rick Carlisle, that's the guy you sit, because he wasn't scoring a ton. He was getting cooked on defense, and he was giving the ball away on offense.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see, because game number six back in Indiana, we only have a couple seconds left here in this segment, Coach. Tyrese Halliburton, are we worried about his performance in game number five due to injury and bleeding into game number six?
Yeah, I'm concerned. But the other thing is the fact that Oklahoma City smells blood, and they could run so many defenders. This is where running in transition is going to be an issue with Indiana, because they actually need to play half court with Halliburton to save his legs.
Coming into this next game, number six, obviously there, it is going to be a must win to force a game number seven. And maybe a little Ace Bailey news hitting the forefront here with Coach. How about that?
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
NBA Finals game number six action here. A quote that came from last night in the postgame press conference that said, if I can walk, then I want to play. That's Tyrese Halliburton, who got injured early in that game, was ineffective the entire game. TJ McConnell really stepped up, and they were within 2 points in the fourth quarter, but weren't able to win. That's the Pacers. So, Coach, if we re-rack this series here, the betting prices at the FanDuel Sportsbook, OKC, Well, it's a massive favorite at minus 1,600. The Pacers at a plus 900. The games to finish the series in six games, minus 200. To get to a seventh game, plus 168. Live, Coach, your thoughts on the series and the prices now.
Well, I'm not surprised the odds of Oklahoma City is a favorite going into game six because of the fact that Indiana won. Plays worse at home than they do on the road. Two, you have a compromised Halliburton. And three, you have a team that OKC that, let's be honest, if they don't choke game one, this series is already over. Let's be honest. And then they also lost a tight, game number three. So when you kind of think about it, like, what team has been more impressive over the totality of the series? It's been Oklahoma City. So that's why it makes sense to me. What doesn't make sense is the fact that I think Indiana with Tyrese Halliburton did a no-win situation. Here's why. Tyrese plays last night hurt. He hurts his team. But if Rick Carlisle sits Tyrese Halliburton in game five of a 2-2 series, then there's an issue. So to me, it's like he can't win. And it's also he can't win because of the fact that T.J. McConnell was so good and they made that run without him. Now, here's a difference here. And we saw this last series with the Knicks. Is I forget what game it was. I think it was game three when Brunson got in foul trouble. And Tibbs was like, I'm sorry, man. You got to sit. I got to get a win here. So it takes a lot of guts for a coach to do it. But to me, as much as Halliburton wasn't great, I still look at Nembhard and the fact that he wasn't good with the ball either. You probably could have put a better score next to him to take the load off of him. But now we got a do-or-die situation. The best thing for Indiana is it's 2 days off between now and game six. Hopefully Halliburton will be healthy enough to give it a strong go Thursday night.
Yeah, it's crazy, Coach, because, again, Halliburton's not the leading scorer on this team. They don't need him to drop 28 points in order to beat Oklahoma City. The thing that scares me, if you're OKC, Coach, this team is night and day at home versus on the road offensively. The Pacers have a legit shot of going home, winning this game, getting it back to a game seven, and anything is possible. But I don't think you need a 30-point effort from Halliburton to do so.
No, you don't. Let's be honest. You need what you got out of Pascal Siakam. You got to rebound the ball better. You got to cut down the turnovers. And you got to win a three-point battle. Now, can they do those four things? Absolutely they can do those four things. Can they do those four things Thursday and then on Sunday? Probably not. That's the issue is I said this to you guys yesterday. I don't think Indiana wins this series in seven. I think their chance is in six. Now, it would be great for them to go home and feed off of that home crowd. Now, to me, that means if you're taking Indiana, you got to play from the lead, from the jump. So if you like Indiana, maybe the best thing to do is just take them to win the first quarter and then ride the game live because we said it just before, there's going to be ebbs and flows in this game offensive, defensively. But it's key for Indiana to get off to a good start in game number six on Thursday night.
Changing market conditions, as always, here on the FanDuel Sports. We'll take a look at the NBA Finals MVP market. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander at a minus 550 price here. Jalen Williams at a 7-1, fresh off a 40-point effort in that pivotal game number five. Pascal Siakam 13-1, and Halliburton dropping now. The injury concerns, and certainly down 3-2 in the series at 33-1. Is it still SGA for you, or could we see Jalen Williams with a surge again in game number six?
I mean, if you get a 35-40-point game in a game six on back-to-back games, I mean, anything's possible. But if you look at the totality of the series, SGA has been better. It's just been the last game or two where Jalen Williams really has stepped up. So it would take, an SGA performance of, let's say, like 19, 20 points, rough shooting night, and then Jalen Williams gives you 35 to 40 in a closeout game, back-to-back 40-point, 35-plus games, then, yeah, you could probably look at Jalen Williams. But the amount of that they have the ball in his hands, SGA, you would think is SGA, it just wonders now, and I know this sounds crazy, does Rick Carlisle change his starting lineup? Maybe it's time for him to change it. Maybe Mathurin for Nembhard, something that's a little bit bigger to guard Jalen Williams to start the game. Do you do something wild like go three bigs with Obi Toppin so you can stick Siakam on him and put Obi on Chet? You have to do something to combat the size of that backcourt. That's 6'5", 6'6", and the way that SJ and Jalen Williams get to the rack and can bump you off with the dribble, you may have to go bigger and get Nembhard out of the starting lineup to get a little bit of length and bulk in the backcourt.
We talked yesterday, Coach, about the total in the game. We thought it got a little low. We did like the over in that game, and certainly that hit. I'm looking at the lines. It opened up -5, Oklahoma City, and we're back to that 224 and a half mark here. They got to play with pace, the Pacers. You said it. Is this another over for us here?
Here's a crazy thing I'm going to say, Joe, and this is going to go against everything I think with Indiana. With Halliburton's calf, I don't think they could run. So it comes down to turnovers. So to me, if you like the Pacers to cover, if not win, you're looking under. If you like the game to go over, you're looking at OKC. Because I think OKC, it shows that they have just as much depth, they are more healthier, and their defense.
Look at that. Coach, I mean, look, heavy in thought at this point right now, the coach giving out his thoughts, because we're looking forward to game number 6, Joe, on Thursday night. And that is a favorite here for OKC at -5 in that total, as we talked about, Coach, at 224. Tell us again, you cut out just a few moments here of that talking point you had.
Yeah, to me, it's Indiana. If you like Indiana, you're probably going under in the game. Because I think with Halliburton's calf, I don't think you want to push the pace and tempo. But if you're OKC, you smell blood. You know that he can't get back on defense. You want to expose him defensively. You want to get out and run and let that defense be a catalyst for offense. So very simple. OKC over, Indiana and under.
There you go. So we're going to wait a couple days here to what, Thursday, until we get game number 6. So a couple days to let Halliburton heal at this point. But understand this. We have a few days to process, as I said. But next week, Coach, we're 1 week away from the NBA draft. And you guys do a great job in the network. Everybody works hard to bring a awesome first-class production together. But we're already getting news out here. How about this? Ace Bailey, Coach. Did you see the news coming out with Ace? Hey, draft me teams. And is he sabotaging like Shedeur Sanders out in the streets? Give us a little preview of the draft show next week and Ace Bailey. This information is going to start to pop over the next week, Coach.
Well, we better hope that he don't slide to the 5th round, because there's only two rounds in the NBA draft. So he'll be an undrafted rookie if that happens. But listen, Ace Bailey is a dynamic offensive talent, can shoot the ball. You got to question sometimes his motor and his shot selection, which was extremely poor at Rutgers. Took some of the worst shots I've seen and a coach in a long time, but he wants to be a star. But look how the lottery set itself up. Dallas, San Antonio, and then Philadelphia. Three teams that I expect to be in the playoffs, specifically Philadelphia, if they stay healthy. That means maybe he doesn't want to go top three. Edgecombe goes 3. Maybe he's looking at, I don't know, Utah, Washington, where he could get the minutes. Because if he goes to any of those places, he ain't playing over those guys in Philadelphia. He's not playing over those guys in Dallas. And he ain't playing over Wemby and Keldon Johnson right now, or Sohan in San Antonio. He's going to have to sit like Reed Shepard. Seems like a kid that doesn't want it. He wants to play. Be interested to see what happens.
Which is insane. Like, when you're on a job interview, like, you can put that point across, like, I'm going to work out for you, but I'm going to tell you, me and my team, here's what we think is going to be best for my future here. Let me know how you can help it. As opposed to, I'm not working out for you. Every time I interview, I'm just going to sabotage it here. It's unbelievable. Like, get your career off to a good start here. Come on, Ace. That's JY to the break. Give us something, JY. Give us a move.
All right. Great studio.
All right.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Oh, we hit the NBA, we hit the ice, we do it all in the early line. Action-packed, the guests just get better and better because we need that information. We are coming down to the Stanley Cup could be given out. The NBA championship is ready to end at this point, and we need some help. I'm Donnie Wrightside along with Joe Ranieri. Let's welcome in Pete Jensen of the NHL Network. This is what I love about this, Pete. Here's what I love. A tweet by the official Stanley Cup account that says, I'll be in the building tonight, Pete. How we feeling?
Feeling good. I think the Edmonton Oilers are facing another uphill battle, right? They've had 8 different come-from-behind victories, and they have a good record, I believe 4-2 following a loss this postseason. So it's going to be tough, though. The Panthers are the deeper team, the more consistent team with the better goaltending. So definitely a heavier-than-usual lean on the Panthers, but this has been a tight series. I wouldn't be surprised if this game went to overtime. We've already seen 3 overtime games through 5, which is pretty crazy.
I would absolutely love that. You take a look, Pete, at the first 5 games of this series. The Oilers won game number 1 on their home ice in overtime. The Panthers countered away in Edmonton, winning game number 2 in overtime 5-4. The Panthers came home and stomped the Edmonton Oilers 6-1. And then the Oilers fought all the way back in game number 4 from a 3-goal deficit to win in overtime. And then the Panthers showed up big time in Edmonton with a 5-2 victory there to take that series lead with the chance to clinch the cup. So the evolution of this series for you, Pete, what has it been? What have you seen?
Yeah, I think that some of those games up in Edmonton, especially the last one, that I mean, the game 2 that Edmonton lost at home was in, you know, double overtime. Brad Marchand, like, you can't really blame him for that one. Brad Marchand, by the way, 6 goals in the series. I mean, he's skyrocketed up the Conn Smythe Trophy odds board. I'm sure we'll get to that later. But yeah, I've seen kind of the goaltending of Edmonton. They have a good tandem, but they've just had a shaky series. Calvin Pickard's been a little bit better than Skinner, facing high danger shot attempts from the other side, from Edmonton, from Florida. But I think that overall, Sergei Bobrovsky, that steady hand and the ability of the Florida Panthers to win so many road games, an NHL record of road victories in a single postseason, this team might just be that good and unstoppable in these type of situations and as the series goes on.
Yeah, a lot was made, Pete, about in the offseason that Edmonton kind of built this team around beating the Panthers, and yet the Panthers made a few moves and all of a sudden, you know, they, and here we go. But it's the steady hand. You mentioned Bobrovsky. I think the coaching, and I think in a game 6 situation at home, it feels like when Edmonton loses, the Panthers just have their number here. Is it important that the Edmonton get out early, or do you think it doesn't matter in this spot here tonight?
I don't think it matters if Florida scores first, but it just can't. It can't snowball, you know, like they would have to answer quickly. And they've been good on the live line this postseason. Remember, they have the 8 come from behind victories, but 6 of them came in a row, going from the start of that LA Kings series when they were down 2-0. They won 4 straight, and then they won games 1 and 2 against Vegas in, you know, similar situation, comeback fashion. So I think that overall, you know, you look at this series from Edmonton, game 6 is attainable. There's no question about it. It's just going to be, I think, is Connor McDavid going to take over here? We saw signs of it in game 5. I thought for most of that game, nobody else on the team really stepped up. Connor McDavid was electric in that game. He scored 1 goal. He hit the post early in the game, kind of bobbled a play on the doorstep where he also could have scored. But the problem was, even if those 2 other shots fall and he had a hat trick, they might have still lost that game 4-3. So I think the biggest storyline here is McDavid going to take over, contrary to what happened last year. Remember games 6 and 7, even though he won the Conn Smythe for the losing team last year, he was held without a point in games 6 and 7. So maybe this is a night to just, you know, look at all those McDavid props and hope for better fortunes than what we've seen, because this is everything on the line for this guy, and it's a legacy moment for him if they do win game 6 and 7.
It'd be so much fun to watch a game number 7, unless you're holding a Florida Panthers ticket or just a Florida Panthers fan. But Pete, answer me this question, because once you get into the Stanley Cup final, you're supposed to have everything ironed out, which includes your goalie situation. Bobrovsky on one side, there's no worries. He's going to be your goalie tonight. They expect a great performance. Who will be in net for the Edmonton Oilers? And also the psychology here of those 2 goalies now. Oh no, am I in? Am I out? Am I going to get pulled quickly here? That's got to be damaging to them.
It's tough. I mean, it's tough to leave Stuart Skinner on the bench. He has three shutouts this postseason. That's difficult to do. So that type of ceiling, I feel like they're probably going to go back to him at some point. But the leash has got to be short. I mean, we've seen it in some of these other games where, you know, goalies get pulled, right? Skinner got pulled, and then Pickard came in, and they came back from down 3-0 in game four to win that game. You saw worse fortunes, of course, in the clinching game for Edmonton against Dallas. Remember, Dallas pulled their goalie, Jake Ottinger, early, came back to bite Coach Pete DeBoer. He got fired, you know, made some comments after, and it kind of spiraled out of control. So the goalie situation is a delicate balance, but I will say Edmonton has a good tandem, and these guys pick each other up. That's why I feel like if it was me, I would probably go back to Stuart Skinner, but it's still to be determined a couple hours before puck drop.
Series odds here, Pete, as we take a look right now, you know, the re-racking of the series. Obviously, the favorite is the Florida Panthers. They're one win away from hoisting the Stanley Cup. But at the FanDuel Sportsbook, the Florida Panthers a minus 400 price to win that cup, which means if they lose six, there's still a chance in game number seven. And the Oilers at a plus 310 price. Are we giving up on the Oilers here? Because I thought in game number four, like the Oilers would be dead to rights. They fought hard. So the expectations are the Panthers will win the cup. But life still here quickly on the Oilers?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I know Florida clinched the cup at home last year, but I mean, this is a situation where you can maybe buy low on the Edmonton Oilers, whether it's the McDavid Conn Smythe futures or the series price. I mean, people are losing faith in this team, but they've won in so many different ways all postseason long. If McDavid takes over, it's certainly a possibility.
More from Pete Jensen next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
The Stanley Cup is in the building tonight. Sunrise, Florida. Game number six between the Edmonton Oilers and the Florida Panthers here. Pete Jensen on the talk. Even more hockey with us in this segment. The Conn Smythe Trophy. Understand this. We always like to designate this. The NBA Finals MVP is the Finals MVP, not the culmination of the entire playoffs. The Conn Smythe Trophy is not the Finals MVP. It's the culmination of the playoffs. Sam Bennett, currently a favorite here, Pete, at a minus 160 price on the FanDuel Sportsbook. Followed by Brad Marchand, who's been fantastic in the finals here at a plus 410 price. If you do see a game tonight that goes the direction of the Florida Panthers, who for you is going to be that Conn Smythe winner?
Right now, it's a toss-up between Bennett and Marchand, and those odds suggest that maybe Marchand is someone that could, you know, improve his narrative in this game. He's already had an electric series with six goals in the Stanley Cup final, including two game winners and that one that came past regulation. So it's one of those things where, you know, maybe Marchand scores the first goal, maybe he scores the last goal to clinch it. I think that Sam Bennett, with his goal scoring, has been hands down the best goal scorer in the NHL this postseason. You can't take that away from him. Interesting wrinkle is that Bennett and Marchand are both in contract years, so they're both improving their stock. Both, if they leave Florida, they're going to make a ton of money, even though Marchand's a veteran. But I step back and look at big picture, like the Florida Panthers won the cup last year. What did they need to do in order to repeat as champions if they are able to do so? And it looks like that's the route we're going. They won the NHL trade deadline by picking up Brad Marchand, a fierce rival from the Bruins, and they've kind of made him feel at home very quickly. And I also think that maybe other than Bobrovsky, if you look at all four rounds of the Panthers, I think that the most consistent player and consistent game breaker has been Brad Marchand. So I think it's a really interesting storyline that just seems to keep getting better and better each game.
And so who are some of the guys tonight we should be looking at scoring-wise on both sides? What are you thinking?
Sure. So those two guys I mentioned for Florida, I feel like some of the defensemen have been very productive this postseason. Whether you look at Aaron Ekblad, he's also a contract-year guy, might be playing his last game with the Florida Panthers if they're not able to re-sign all these guys. So look for a big effort from Ekblad. Matthias Ekholm had 4 shots on goal the last game. He has been a difference maker for the Oilers on the blue line. Remember, they're a leaky defensive team. Some nights they show maximum effort. Sometimes, you know, they're kind of like the Knicks, where they, like, some nights they play defense extremely well. Sometimes they are a bit leaky. But Matthias Ekholm is their best two-way defenseman, and I like what he's brought to the table offensively. And then a dark horse, Corey Perry, is leading the Cup Final series in shots on goal from high-danger areas. So Corey Perry, even though he's 40 years old, has scored a ton of high-danger goals this postseason. He is a way to find some value in the top line for Edmonton. You know, obviously everyone knows McDavid and Draisaitl, how productive they are. But Corey Perry is getting kind of a share of those points by association and has had, you know, a bounce back postseason and will probably score a goal even if they lose the game. So look out for those Corey Perry props out there.
I'll tell you what's crazy is how talented some of those frontline Oilers are. You take a look at Draisaitl to get a point tonight, -390, only to be topped by Connor McDavid to get a point tonight, -520 price, which is insanity. But we do have a game 6 tonight here, Pete. And if you look at the FanDuel Sportsbook, the Florida Panthers, a favorite at a -152 price live and a total of 6.5. What happens tonight? And do we see Lord Stanley's Cup get polished and handed out?
I mean, I would look at the overtime play. That's my favorite for these high-stakes games. You see it sometimes in Game 7s. You see it in the Four Nations Championship game. I feel like when these games are so evenly matched and one team just doesn't want to go away, like, you know, the Oilers will probably have a better effort than they did in Game 5, facing elimination, facing their season potentially ending, facing a lot of question marks with Connor McDavid, you know, with him entering his contract year coming up soon, not this summer, but, you know, the clock's ticking a little bit on Edmonton's chances of winning the cup in the McDavid era. So a lot on the line here. Wouldn't be surprised if it went to overtime for the 4th time in 6 games. And if I had to make a pick, I mean, my pre-series pick was Edmonton. So I still think there's a glimmer on this team, and they'll have to rip their hearts out in order to get back home for Game 7. So it went 7 last year. Why not this year again? Been so close.
Love to see it. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Pete, for all that information on the NHL. Game 7, could it be? We'll find out.